Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, August 9th, 2022 meeting for the Aurora Granite City Council. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton.
Here.
Councilmember Paulding.
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem George.
Here.
Mayor Ray Bressum.
Here. Would you please silently join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. Tonight we have Campfire Central Coast of California and Heather Moran and Claire Graceland, Gabriela, and Grant. Come on up. We await your instructions.
Thank you all. And I'm going to let the youth take it from here, but I do want to just take a moment and thank you all for supporting Campfire Central Coast. You were generous enough to donate some funds to help the kids this year at Camp Taconico. So it's just a pleasure to be here. And thank you for your support. After you, kids, go ahead.
Audience, attention. Audience, please stand. Please salute. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated.
Oh, don't go anywhere, guys. I just heard about this camp you went to. Can someone tell us about it?
Camp Taconico is held at Camp AG, and we have groups ranging from kindergarten to sixth grade, and then seventh grade and up is like JCs and LITs that help out the adults, which are the counselors, and we swim and we do crafts, and it's really fun for all ages.
Yeah. Does anybody else want to tell us more about what you've been doing?
When you go into seventh grade or your first year being an older camp member, you are trained to make sure you know what you should do or not. So in seventh grade, they give you basic training on how to be a leader. And then in eighth grade and up, you are ready to be an LIT, which is when you, for the whole day, instead of taking about 2 or 3 hours out for training, you will be with your squad for the whole day, and it's really fun. The kids, I think, really enjoy it. We have a swimming pool with lifeguards, and that's probably one of our most popular things, and events. So.
We also do a lot of activities, so we do training for, like, fire safety and knife safety and a lot of things like that, which are really cool to learn. And we do each activity so we can do music, bow and arrow, and I think there's one more, like arts and crafts, that you can also do.
All right, scouts and future campfire people and future leaders, thank you so much for coming down here. Maybe you'll be on this side of the dais one day.
Thank you.
All right, for agenda review, this is item 5. Anybody have any need to suggest a reorder of our agenda this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll proceed as published. Item 5A is closed session announcements. We have none, nor do we have ordinances to read in title only tonight. We have no ordinances on tonight's agenda. So that takes us to item 6, special presentations, and we will first have our update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts. And Assistant City Manager Robeson, will you be the one giving this report?
Thank you, Mayor. Our city manager is on Zoom, and she'll take over.
Thank you. I'm here. Hopefully everyone can hear me okay. I do have just a few updates on COVID. We are still experiencing COVID. We currently have, according to the county's update from today, 506 active cases, 14 people hospitalized, and the county reported 7 additional deaths for a total of 535 for our county. The county is continuing to offer vaccines But they are no longer taking walk-ins, so they're asking people to make appointments in order to help make sure they have the right staff and folks available, including those for children who are under five who are now able to receive the vaccine. The county is also continuing to offer test-to-treat services, so that allows people to get both tested and receive treatment with antiviral drugs such as Paxlovid, depending on their qualifications. So that's about it from me on COVID for this evening.
All right, let's check in with the council and see if anyone has questions. All right, let's, anyone in the audience like to come up and ask a question about our COVID-19 report? Check in with AGP. Would anyone like to speak on this item?
If any members of the public would like to speak on this item, please raise your hand now. I'm seeing no raised hands.
And any written correspondence received?
There are none.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll close that item and move forward to city manager communications.
I'll go ahead and jump in here to provide a brief update on a few items. First, we wanted to remind everyone that we are holding a Village Business Roundtable meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock here at Council Chambers. I believe we may be pulling up a flyer for that event, but that we're excited to move forward with this discussion with our village businesses that will still be held tomorrow morning. Our fall activity guide was mailed out today. It will be announcing activities that our Recreation Services Department is coordinating through December. And then finally, just a few items mentioned coming up on future agendas. The Harvest Festival temporary use permit will be coming forward. That Harvest Festival is scheduled for September 23rd through the 26th. We will also be talking about street repairs and selecting streets for our upcoming street repair program for 2022. And you will be seeing a few long-range planning items, a few ordinances coming forward as well, one on short-term rentals, which includes vacation rentals and homestays, a parklets ordinance, and the ADU ordinance that our council discussed recently, and it's been working its way through the Planning Commission. So for me, that's all the updates I have, unless our assistant city manager and public works director has anything to add.
No, that would wrap it up. Thank you.
All right. Any questions of staff? All right. Anyone in the public would like to speak on this item? This is item 6B. Seeing no one, I'll check in with AGP.
If any members of the public online would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. I'm seeing no raised hands.
Thank you. And any written correspondence received?
There are none.
And we'll close public comment, and we will move on to item 6C. So Chief is going to come on up here, and we're going to do the introduction and oath of office for police officers Enriqueta Peñado and Ramon Easter. So come on up.
Hello, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Thank you for having us this evening. This is yet another exciting time for our police department. As you've heard me discuss in the past, recruitment in law enforcement is extremely challenging nationally, and in fact, in all industries, it is very, very challenging these days. So the fact that this evening we're able to introduce two new members to our Rio Grande Police Department family is extremely exciting for me and definitely for our community. What makes us really special is that these two members were essentially recruited by other members of our department. And what makes that, for me, more meaningful is the fact that the members of our department recognize that these two individuals were not only the right fit for our organization, but they were the right fit for our community as well. And having the experience of working for our agency and knowing what our community is all about and the culture of our police department and what we do here in Rio Grande, to bring them on gave me the confidence that we are bringing on two individuals that fit, and that's extremely important for our future. So with that being said, I won't take much time other than I would I'd like to introduce our first officer. If she wouldn't mind coming up, Keta Pinato. Keta was born and raised in Santa Maria, where she and her three brothers spent most of their time outdoors and were involved in sports. Before I forget, otherwise I might get some things wrong here. It's unfortunate getting old, but after developing a love for running in high school, she received a scholarship offer and ran collegiately at Chico State. She graduated with a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and a bachelor's degree in psychology. A few weeks after graduating from Chico State, she was hired by the UCSB Police Department and attended the Law Enforcement Academy here local at Allen Hancock College. Over the last 6 years, she held several roles in the department, including 2 years as a supervisory role. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time outdoors with her husband, Jeff, and her dog, Nash. Keta is excited and honored to be a part of the Aurora Grande Police Department and looks forward to serving the community during her career. Next, I will introduce Officer Ray Easter. Officer Ray Easter was born and raised on the Central Coast. He has been married to his wife, Carrie, for 18 years, and they have 2 sons. Tristan, who just returned home from the U.S. Army, and Donovan, who is a junior in high school. Officer Easter served in the U.S. Army for 3 years before he was hired by the Cal Poly Police Department in 2006. In 2010, he transferred to the Santa Maria Police Department, where he spent the past 11 years working in various assignments, including traffic officer, SWAT officer, range master, and was a member of the department's honor guard. In his free time, he enjoys spending time with his family, camping, boating, and appreciates old cars. Welcome, Officer Easter and Officer Pinato. And now for our oath of office.
We can turn this way so everyone can see. If you vote at the same time, you raise your right hand. I state your name.
I, Ray Easter.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
I will bear true faith and allegiance
to the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
I will well and faithfully discharge
the duties upon which I am about to enter.
The duties
upon which I'm about to enter.
Congratulations.
So if I can introduce Keta's husband, Jeff, to pin on her badge.
Pressure,
And if I can introduce Officer Easter's wife, Carrie, to come and pin on his badge. And I'll just remind you, we'll do Velcro badges next time.
Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and open up public comment and see if anyone would like to come up and say a few words about this item. Sure. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming to Arroyo Grande. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Always such happy occasions. This takes us to community comments and suggestions. This is where the community can come forward and talk to us about items that are not on tonight's agenda. Please come forward and speak for 3 minutes or less and address the council as one body.
Thank you. My name is Chris Piles. I live over on West Cherry over by the high school. And I reached out to several entities about the parking situation over there. I understand that it's kind of a complex problem. And what my basic problem is from 5:30 in the morning until well after 10 o'clock at night, it's almost impossible to park in front of my house. That school was built as an elementary school in the beginning, and those houses were built in 48, so they only have single lane driveways. And it's if I do use my driveway, then we're constantly playing musical cars in the driveway. I showed up a day late and a dollar short when I went over to the city and asked about maybe making some changes, because there was a discussion, I guess, the day before about removing the signs. So I'm asking to not have the signage removed, and I'm also asking to have the police department enforce the parking rules over there. Because I'm under the impression that they haven't really enforced the parking signs, and it's been a while. It's been years.
Could you please, first of all, are you all done?
Oh, I could go on.
No.
3 minutes isn't enough for what. So
my suggestion is we've heard this from another resident as well, and the city manager is working with that resident, and then we're doing a little research in the background to find out what is there. So
not,
we can't take any action or discussion
because
isn't an agendized item, but can you give your contact information to the city clerk and we'll reach out to you and work with you on and get all these questions answered for you?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
So some of the other things, I think I watched you guys on Zoom last week, and a woman stepped forward and she said something about the concrete in front of her house, the sidewalk is all broken up. It is. I mean, if you go over to our neighborhood on California Street, there are no sidewalks. And that's where a bulk of those kids get dumped out on, right there by the football field entrance. And then, like, the sidewalk doesn't even start to my property. My concrete's broken. And it's like if you go around the corner and you go almost all the way down Orchard, all that concrete's destroyed. You know, and then on the far side, like where the Betts Hall is, they don't have concrete over there. I was wondering if maybe we could look into doing something about the sidewalks over in our neighborhood. I mean, I don't have a problem with you guys doing those sidewalks out here. I like to have our city downtown look nice, but I kind of feel like we're kind of neglected. I understand that there's more than it's more than just parking over there. I think at one point somebody said that you guys were kind of looking at doing some traffic changes, like maybe changing Fair Oaks down to one lane in each direction. I don't know if that's possible. I just kind of feel like the school's expanded and kind of outgrown itself over there in that old neighborhood. I'd like to maybe meet with somebody that we could discuss, where I could show like what it's like to live over there with traffic and with the parking situation. I don't necessarily blame the kids or the parents or the buses or anybody in particular, but it just seems like it's a lot of pieces. It's Cuesta College over there parking kind of wherever they want after they, I think they show up after 5. So they're from 5 to like 9:30, 10, you know, it just seems like it's turned into a major event center, and it's kind of like the school doesn't have, and I know that this is the CMR's problem, but they don't have, they haven't made accommodations for the right amount of parking, or they don't utilize it. Like they, right now they've got, they moved portables over to their tennis court parking lot, and now everybody parks in front of my house, and it feels like it's 24/7. So, and I know it's not, I know that, I understand that probably that's changed over there. I'm going to run out of time, that the people don't call and complain, but it's not proportional to who's impacted. It's more me and probably the corner. Maybe.
So let's continue the conversation because I think that's important. So the city clerk has put a pen and paper over here for you. So if you could give your contact information, our assistant city manager right here is also our public works director. And so I'm sure that he can reach out to you and have a discussion and talk about, you know, what can be done, what our constraints are and all that. So they'll follow up with you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Of course. I would say anyone else, but they would have to be invisible. So let's turn this over to AGP and see if there's anyone online who would like to speak on items not on tonight's agenda.
If any members of the public would like to discuss items not on the agenda tonight, please raise your hand now. Madam Mayor, we have no raised hands.
And any written correspondence received?
There are none.
Okay, so we'll close public comment. Or community comment, excuse me, and move on to the consent agenda items. These are collectively items 8A through 8F. So I will check in with the council and see if anyone would like to ask questions or pull something for separate consideration. Councilmember Sorten?
I do not.
Councilmember Polney? No. Councilmember Barnidge?
No, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem?
No, thank you.
Nor do I. So seeing no one in the chambers right now, we'll go to AGP and see if anyone would like to speak on items 8A through 8F.
If any members of the public would like to speak on these items, please raise your hand now. Madam Mayor, I see no raised hands.
Thank you. And City Clerk Mathson, any written correspondence received?
There are none.
Okay, so we'll close public comment and bring it back around to the council for discussion and possible action. Anyone?
I will move to approve consent agenda items 8A through 8F.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, Cedar Clerk Mattson, we have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russin?
Yes. You're right over there, Barnidge?
Trying to figure out how to use my microphone after 20 years.
Items 9, we have none. Items 10, we have none. So that takes us to item 11A. This is receiving an update regarding the Five Cities Fire Authority and the results of the Oceano Fire Tax Measure A22 and the process for a wind-down period as defined by the Third Amendment to the FCFA Joint Exercise of Powers Agreement. And I assume City Manager McDonald is on the line still to give us that update.
Thank you. Yes, I am here, and I'll just wait for the PowerPoint to be kind of loaded up here. Okay. So we're here to provide an update on the outcome of Oceano Measure A22 and what it will mean for the Five Cities Fire Authority and the wind-down process provided for in the Joint Powers Agreement. Just a little bit of background. The Five Cities Fire Authority was formed in July of 2010 and includes the cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano Community Services District. It provides service to approximately 40,000 residents combined within the three communities. In 2017, the Five Cities Fire Authority Board of Directors adopted a five-year strategic plan that outlines the investments necessary to make sure that the authority has the capital equipment and staffing levels needed to provide the level of service that the three member agencies need moving forward. Then in June of 2019, the Joint Powers Agreement was amended to account for the additional costs and needs to get that strategic plan up and running. And so that amendment was approved that altered the funding formula for each member community share of costs. The funding formula changes were set to go into effect if the Oceano Community Services District was successful in passing a special tax measure in 2020. If the tax measure did not pass in 2020, the amendment to the Joint Powers Agreement identified a wind down process and timeline if the measure were to fail. The measure did not pass in March of 2020 of that year. It fell short by just 10 votes of the 2/3 vote necessary to make the measure successful. Because the measure was so close to passing and the desire to see if the communities could remain together and continue providing service according to the Joint Powers Agreement, the agreement was amended one more time in July of 2020. Under the terms of the third amendment, the Oceano Community Services District was required to try again with a new tax measure in 2022, which was this year. And under the terms, the city's cost for fire service was to remain the same. Essentially, there's been a flat budget for the Five Cities Fire Authority for about 3 years now. We've paid the same amount for the past couple of years, and under the terms of the agreement, that would be the same through June 30, 2022. Under the Third Amendment, if the measure did not pass, the same would remain true, the budget would remain flat, and we would enter into a wind down process yet again. So if Measure A-22 were to have passed, a new funding formula set forth in the second amendment would have taken effect. If it failed, then we would enter into this wind-down process, which would result in Oceano CSD no longer being part of the Joint Powers Authority effective of June 30, 2023. So that's the end of this current fiscal year. Oceano did place Measure A-22 on the ballot in June of 2022, but it did not pass yet again. This time, it was a slimmer of a close win. So it was a 57.75% yes, 42.25% voted no. The results of the election were certified by the county on July 7th, and that certification date set in motion a series of actions that we are now undertaking to wind down the Joint Powers Authority. So as called Third Amendment, we have now entered into that wind down period. At the end of this period, June 30, 2023, Oceano will no longer be a member of the Joint Powers Authority. During that time, the cities of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach will be looking at options for fire service going forward, including potentially negotiating a new or modified Joint Powers Agreement. And according to the Third Amendment, both Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach maintain the right to use the trademark name of Five Cities Fire Authority. So in other words, we can continue operating the Five Cities Fire Authority under that name, but it would only be with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. The Joint Powers Agreement sets forward a number of tasks that we need to undertake in order to complete this wind down process. So we're essentially needing to kind of take Oceano out of the authority, including the assets and liabilities that they bring to the JPA. So by October 1st of this year, we will need to determine a list of equipment and physical assets. Then by February 1st of 2023, we need to identify the amount of debt, employment liability, PERS liability, and other post-employment obligations for the three parties, including Oceano. Then by March 1st of 2023, identify the distribution of other assets that might remain in the Joint Powers Authority. And then again, by June 30, 2023, Oceano would exit the JPA. And then the Joint Powers Agreement includes a kind of wrap-up period. So by October 1st, there will be a reconciliation process so that any party owing funds would be required to pay those by October 1st, 2023. So we are now entering into this flow chart because we know that the measure was unsuccessful. So we are in this 12-month wind-down period where OCSD will exit. They have some options to consider and pursue for fire service for their jurisdiction, but the wind-down process itself will involve all parties, including the Five Cities Fire Authority, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, as we identify those assets and liabilities and distribute them. At the same time, Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach will be discussing the future of fire service for our communities, including our desired level of service and investment. So we need to identify the amount of funding that's required in order to make sure we're providing the service level that our communities need, and then look at potentially a reconstituted or amended joint powers authority and agreement. So we're in that, we've started that process now, and we're in the beginning phases of evaluating options and determining what we think might work best for our communities. So like us and what we're doing this evening, the Five Cities Fire Board of Directors was provided with a summary of this wind down process on July 15th. And we've met a couple times with the managers group, so that includes the city managers and the general manager of the Oceano CSD, as well as our fire chief and administrative services director of the city of Arroyo Grande, who's also provides service to the fire authority. In addition, so we will be meeting regularly to oversee this wind down process and make sure we're meeting those milestones so that we're able to complete what the joint powers agreement calls for to essentially remove Oceano from the JPPA. At the same time, we are undertaking a separate process with Grover Beach to evaluate the desired level of fire and emergency medical services and funding needs for our communities and the options that we have to meet those needs going forward. These have already started amongst the city managers and will include negotiations regarding possibly a modified joint powers agreement and other options that we might want to consider for contract service delivery going forward. Because we are at the beginning stages of this process, we will be certainly providing regular updates to the City Council. And we know because these are obviously very important issues and items for us to make sure we have fire service going forward, we will be providing an update in the fall, as well as seeking direction with completed. We're anticipating completing this process in early 2023, well before the completion of the wind down process for the Third Amendment. And with that, this is a receive and file item. We mostly wanted to provide an update to everyone, let everyone know we have formally kicked off the wind down procedures and process, and we'll be working through that in the coming months. And so I am here, and our Fire Chief Lieberman is also available by Zoom as well to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, City Manager McDonald. Let's check in with the council, and we'll start with Councilmember Storton because he is also a Five Cities Fire Authority board member. So do you have anything to add or questions? Or
No questions, but I will have some comments when we get to that.
Okay, great. Councilmember Storton, any questions? Excuse me, Paulding?
I have the same. No questions, only comments. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Barnage? Mayor Pro Tem?
No questions, thank you.
And my only question is, Whitney, I believe this was the same presentation that was made in Grover Beach, is that right?
I think it's probably very similar. Right. Okay. We definitely borrowed or shared heavily amongst each other, and I believe we modeled much of what we discussed as well based on what Chief Lieberman presented to the Fire Authority Board as well.
Got it. So as these future updates happen, are they going to be coordinated with Grover Beaches as well, so all that information is getting out to the community equally?
Sure. We can definitely do that.
Perfect. All right. So I will go ahead and open up public comment right now, and seeing no one running in from the street, I'll turn it over to AGP.
If any members of the public would like to make a comment this time, please raise your hand so now. I see no raised hands.
Okay. And City Clerk Mattson, any written correspondence received?
There are none.
All right. Well, then let's come back around to Mr. Storton.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the report. This is very similar to what I received. So the information is fresh and new to you, but it's something that has been discussed for a while now, just waiting for the results of A22. And unfortunately, it didn't pass. I was hoping it would. I think we all have had discussions in the past about really wanting to have a strong fire authority between the three communities. Certainly there's wiggle room with what that may look like moving forward, but going through this process, we have to respect that process and see what's out there as far as what we can do to formulate a strong fire authority. Since 2010, we've had a number of individuals. And I want to give kudos to Chief Lieberman, his staff, and certainly the firefighters that have been working in that environment for many years and really just struggling to secure their identity as what it really means to be a firefighter in our community. It's been, unfortunately, inconsistent. It's hard to depend on some of the decisions that have been made, and there's some insecurity within the organization as to what this will look like moving forward. So I do have to say that I am thankful for the employees that are working with the organization now. They're working very hard, not only to help our community, but as we know, a number of our firefighters respond to wildland fires throughout the state of California and other areas, and are working very hard to keep our communities and other communities safe. So I hope as these discussions are taking place, I think we have to recognize as a council our commitment of the decisions we make to support what a fire authority or fire services mean to our community. I hope we can continue to do it in some form of collaboration, even to include Oceano. But again, that's all part of future discussions. I don't know where I'll be at those time when some of that information comes forward, and I may not even be on this council to have a choice to make some of that decision, but some of you will be. So I just think we really need to look what that means, and it will require a financial commitment to provide the services and support the employees that are doing the job to really create a strong fire service for our community. I'm confident about those conversations, but I think it will be important, and that will certainly be addressed next year as the budget is brought forward and what that means. But I really hope that we send a strong message that we will support a continued collaboration and commitment in funding equipment and high-end services for our community. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate those comments, Councilmember Storton. And I, too, would just want to express, you know, my gratitude to our firefighters and the Five Cities Fire Authority for all that it does, and hope that we can work out a regional solution. But I do think that this wind down process and the way that we've kind of set this up through the Third Amendment makes sense. And I completely I just have confidence in our city managers to negotiate the, you know, the best fit solution moving forward. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. I don't have a lot to add. Definitely appreciate the update, and especially putting it before the public so they can sort of see what's going on. And I look forward to continuing our partnership and, you know, supporting our firefighters as well, because I agree there has been uncertainty, and I hope we can change that soon. So thank you.
Thank you. And Mayor Pro Tem George.
Thank you. I look forward to just hearing what all the different options are moving forward. I think moving from a reserve firefighter model to a full-time firefighter model has had a lot of growing pains, and just really hope that our city will support our firefighters as we move forward and come to a new agreement. Thank you.
And the only thing I would add is that we know we're better together, and we know that our city is not getting any smaller. Our needs are not getting any less. So I liked what you said, Councilor Paulding, about having faith in the process and in our city managers. So thanks in advance for all that hard work that we don't see behind the scenes. And I look forward to whatever comes out the other side as being able to serve our community at the level that they expect to be served. So with that, that takes us to item 11B. This is our 2021 annual report for the Northern Cities Management Area, or NCMA. And Assistant City Manager Robeson, is that you? Or I see Shane coming from the special closet.
Yes.
O staff members.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor and Council members. Yes, we have Shane Taylor, our Utilities Manager, is going to present to your Council.
Is this on?
One more press.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council members. I am Shane Taylor, Utilities Manager, and I appreciate the opportunity to come forth again and present the 2021 Northern Cities Management Area Annual Report. We do this annually, and this report comes at a pretty pivotal time in our water supply as the drought continues. So a reminder, this report is based on the data that our consultants obtained throughout the calendar year. So I know it's August 2022, but it takes a long time to pull all this data together, organize it, and then have it reviewed by not only the Technical Advisory Committee, which I'm on, with the Northern Cities Management Area, but all our legal counsels, and then prepare it and submit it to the Superior Court in the County of Santa Clara to Judge Kerwin, and they accept the report, and we move on. But it's important, and we make a lot of effort to check how our groundwater basin is doing, and we spend quite a bit of money, all of us. So. And with that, we'll get going on it. This first slide, there's the dunes and the ocean. And then to the right there, that is an actual monitoring well cluster. And as you can see, those are three little white PVC pipes. So what these monitoring wells along the coast are at different levels down in the groundwater basin. And we pull samples quarterly. Throughout the year at all these monitoring wells. So that's just a look at how we're doing that. Let's see, how do I move this forward? Just hit enter.
You can hit that arrow or you can use this.
Which one? I'm sorry.
You can hit this arrow.
Oh.
Here, let me use this.
It was working when I...
Sorry, can I lean over you?
Sure, of course. I'm sorry.
No, you're okay. There you go.
Definitely. So here's our presentation. We're going to look at the hydrology. That's how much rain did we get, and the evapotranspiration in 2021, what our demand was in 2021 as far as water, the groundwater basin conditions, and some key findings. So as you all are aware, the Santa Maria groundwater basin is where we get groundwater. Right Grant has other water outside of the basin, but this is about the Santa Maria groundwater basin. It's quite large. As you can see, the adjudicated basin was formed. The court divvied it up into three management areas. The Santa Maria Valley management area is the large green portion, the largest portion. It goes all the way from the ocean, from Guadalupe all the way out past Sisquoc. Then the Pomo management area, the Mesa area is in yellow, and then our area is the Northern Cities, is the little blue area. And each of these management areas are required by the Superior Court to submit an annual report. So just what we're doing here in the NCMA, gathering data, having water tested, monitoring well depths, looking at all kinds of things to do with the groundwater basin. All these agencies combined, the NMA has a number of people or groups in there, the Pomo Community Services District, Woodlands, Golden State Water Company, whereas we have Wright Grande, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Oceano, and Santa Maria also, several entities that come together to form these and create these reports and send it to the court. And then there's a close-up of our management area, of course, who I mentioned, our partners, which we all share in this effort monetarily. And then there's private users, which, of course, there are some private users in our portion of the basin, mostly agricultural farmers. And there's other private users like the town of Halcyon, Pacific Dunes out there. There's some homes that have their own wells. But the majority of the water is from ag and the three cities and the community services district. What's interesting about this slide is also, if you take a look at it, there are some faults that go through our basin, the Oceano Fault, the Santa Maria River Fault, and the Wilmore Fault. And those have impacts on how water moves through the geology of the basin. And it's nice to know that they built Highway 101 right on the Wilmore Fault. I always thought that was crazy myself, but this is our area that we managed as a group. And the hydrology, so our current average annual rainfall is 15.6 inches a year. Now, the calendar year 2021, not so bad, 13.2 inches, just a little below. But as you can see, below average rainfall in 9 of 12 months, and the evapotranspiration exceeded rainfall in 10 of 12 months. Those charts, you can see we got a lot of rain in January and December, but February and March, pretty slim, and November also. So we got most of our rain in 2 months, and that has an impact on how the groundwater basin reacts. And then one of the things we need to do when we figure out how much water is being extracted from the basin, one of the things we have to do is the farmers or the ag wells that utilize the basin, they don't have meters. So whereas all our production wells have meters, so we have metered production. Farmers don't do that. So what we have to know is what crops they're growing. And in this case, you can see the majority are rotational crops, or I call them truck crops, broccoli, cabbage, you name it, lettuce, cauliflower. But there are then strawberries. And then recently, in the last couple of years, avocado production has kind of cropped up. And our fringe areas of our management area up there on the mesa, and lower down there by the Dune Lakes, there's some avocados starting to be grown. If you drive up to JJ's Market and drive down, you'll see a lot of avocado trees that were planted recently up there. But the key thing is we know what crops, and then we can determine, based on the crops, how much water those crops need. And knowing the amount of land that is cultivated and what crops, we can predict and estimate the ag pumpage to support that, support these crops. So that's why it's important to quantify what's being grown and where. And then here's the results of that. Rotational crops, you can see pumped 2,101 acre feet. Strawberries has made a comeback. I remember several years ago, there wasn't a strawberry grown in Arroyo Grande. But recently, the farmers have converted back, especially across from the high school. They put that into strawberry production, which it hadn't been for years. So strawberries have come up, and there's avocados. Remember, 5 years ago, avocados wasn't even on the radar. So, but overall, based on the amount of acreage and crop, it's 2,457 acre feet of ag pumpage. And then, of course, we pump from the Santa Maria groundwater basin. And you can see here in 2021, right, Randy, we only pumped 129 acre feet. That's 10% of our allotment. Grover, 482 acre feet. The majority of, as far as the cities, they're the biggest pumper. And Pismo Beach, very little, 63 acre feet. And Oceano, only 85. Which is 759 acre-feet for the year, which is only 18% of our entitlement per the adjudicated amount. And then there's the ag. So overall, pumping from the Northern Cities Management Area was 3,344 acre-feet, which is 35% of the current safe yield. Just a note on these numbers. You look, why does Grover pump more? Well, we got to remember, Rio Grande gets basically 50% of the production of Lopez Lake, where Grover only gets not near that much. They only get like 800 acre feet. So they have to make up the difference with groundwater, whereas we don't have to rely on groundwater as much. And Pismo Beach and Oceano has state water. And during this drought, Pismo Beach and Oceano has been utilizing their state water to a much higher degree, as you will see. But low pumping numbers. Again, it's been a trend for a number of years. And that total use, you can see here, for us, 2,307 acre-feet total. We've got, there's Lopez, 2,158 acre-feet. If you probably don't know, but our contract entitlement with the county and Lopez is 2,290. So we didn't even use our entire entitlement last year. And we pumped a little bit of groundwater, 129 acre feet, a little more than we have in the past. And other supplies, Arroyo Grande is the only one that's there, and other supplies, that's water from the Pismo Formation. We have two current wells outside of the Santa Maria Basin that we can pump water from. They're smaller wells, but they are not part of the adjudication. And then, of course, the ag. So overall, you can see there, Pismo Beach, for example, Lopez Lake, they took 406 acre feet, but 1302 state water, hardly pumped anything. And Oceano, 470 acre feet. So got to give kudos to them. They have been attempting to make the lake last as long as they can by keeping their entitlements or a portion of it behind the dam and using state water. And that's helping everybody. So overall, 8,658 acre feet use of total water, and the basin only 3,344. And then this is a good graph. If you look at, we'll start at this on the left, that's total acre feet per year. And this chart goes back to all the way to 1986. You can see overall usage just really down. I mean, we're almost using the same amount of water that we did in 1986, which is pretty impressive. That tells you this area has embraced conservation. And all our customers are becoming much more sustainable and appreciative of our water supply and using much less water than we did 15 years ago. If you look at groundwater production, the blue line, you can see it's diving down to its lowest point ever almost there at the end of 2021. It came up a little bit. That's because if you look at the red line, which is Lopez, we started backing off on Lopez. So those two lines are about to meet there. And then state water, Of course, late 90s is when State Water came online, and it's been pretty reliable until the first major drop back in 2014-15. State Water supplies were very limited. Then they came back, and now they're limited again. But as far as here, we're lucky in the fact that the county of San Luis Obispo has a good supply of State Water that's not being utilized. And even though currently the State Water project's only delivering 5%, 5%, think about that. If you signed up for State Water, you're only going to get 5% of what you signed up for. But the county has so much extra State Water that they're able to deliver full entitlement to Grover, to Pismo and Oceano, even at 5%. So that's how that works. And you can see State Water at the end of in 2021 rising, that green line at the bottom. So water use is down. Lopez use is down. Groundwater still pretty down. State Water use up. And that's for 2021. And then we go to great efforts to make sure our basin know the conditions of our basin. And how do we do that? As we have these monitoring wells along the coast. There's five clusters, and we start up there at the Pismo Beach Campground. There's a cluster up there, then by the Ranger Station on Highway 1, and then there's a cluster right there at the Pismo Beach Campground right behind Pier Liquor there. And then, of course, we got some wells in the Oceano Depot parking lot. And then we have a cluster of wells down at mile marker 3. If you've ever been down on the beach, we have a cluster right off the beach there in the dunes. And then we have one well over there along the Mesa boundary that the county put in several years ago to help monitor the difference between the Mesa and the NCMA right at the boundary there. Those are the wells that we monitor every quarter. And they not only take depths, but they also actually pump water out of those wells and then send them to the lab for analysis. And what we're looking for are the background chemistry of that water to make sure that it's not having any signs of what seawater chemistry is, such as we're looking at sodium levels, chloride levels, magnesium, bicarbonate, several constituents. And we do that every quarter. We get a report from our consultants, and those results are what help guide us as to how our basin is doing. So let's see how it's doing. And is this pointer work? Let's see. Maybe I can show you guys here.
You might use your mouse, because then the people at home will be able to see what okay. You're pointing at.
That's a good idea. Yeah, so spring of 2021. So our hydrogeologist, GSI, creates this report. What they do is they get all the well levels, and then they plot them, and then they do contours of where the water is in relation to sea level. And then they put these contours. As you can see, let's see. Oh, there we go. If you look here, that contour is what? Can you see that right there? That's the 10 foot above sea level, and then 20. You'll see this green area. So what we've discovered is the ag wells actually are quite shallow. And this green area is what we call the alluvium. It's not really part of it. It's part of the aquifer, but it's not the part that we draw from. This is the alluvial layer over many hundreds or thousands of years, even. Rio Grande Creek used to just come down and just fan out and go out to the ocean. The alluvial fan, they called it. We created these nice soils. That's why the Sierra Valley is so productive and so valuable as a resource, because of this geology. But what we've discovered is using we want to make sure the alluvial wells, which are like 100 feet deep at the most, 120 feet deep, where our wells are much deeper than that, we wanted to make sure we're looking at them distinctively separate. You can see right over here, where's my mouse? This is in the spring. You can see we've got some areas that are at zero or at sea level. And then they put these arrows in, and this is the gradient. So groundwater actually flows under the ground. It has a natural flow. You can see the flow here on the upper portion of the basin is moving towards the ocean from the mesa area. However, on the southern portion of the basin, we have seen these troughs or pumping depressions in our deep, and that's at sea level in the spring, right there, that contour, 5 feet. What we're noticing is actual gradient from the ocean going inland. That's a bad sign. But that's the spring. We were at zero on this contour. If we go to the fall, of course, it wasn't a good rain year, but you can see now that's at negative 10 feet right here, 10 feet below sea level. The alluvial 10 feet below sea level. But here's where our wells are at, and Grover's wells and Oceana's wells over here. They're still between 5 and 10 feet above sea level. But over in this area, and here's the Mesa management area. Here's Cypress Ridge, Black Lake. This is a concern. This is the pumping depression in our basin that's been identified. And that was the levels in the fall of 2021. And then this chart gives a good overview of what the groundwater levels have been since 1965, actually. And there's quite a bit of gap because we really didn't start monitoring heavily until like 2009, 2010, after the adjudication. All these previous numbers back in here. Where's my notes? These numbers, the county goes out and measures wells twice a year. They go out in the spring and they go out in the fall. And we used to do that too. We give them our measurements because we measure our wells monthly. But that's why there's gaps. But then as we started our monitoring program and reports to the court, we have much more consistent data and could draw these lines. As you can see, here we are back in the drought of 2014. The groundwater basin really was dipping probably, about 4 feet, 3 feet above sea level. And then coming up, we had some rain. But now, here's our trend going back down again. But at the beginning of 2021, we were above this dashed line. And this dashed line is what we call the deep well index level. So we have all these monitoring wells. And we looked at three distinct wells and their depth measurements that mimic where we, the agencies, pump water from. And we've created this deep well index, and our geologists have determined that, you know what, if we could stay, the average of those three wells stay at 7.5 feet above sea level or better, we're in good shape, no worries. But as we drop below that 7.5 foot level for a length of time, that could be conducive to possible seawater intrusion into the basin as the levels drop over a period of time. So at the beginning of 2021, we were good. But at the end, we were below the 7.5 feet. But then we came back up in 2022, this January, but currently we are now again below that 7.5 acre feet for the first quarter. But here's the findings for all this. So We used a little more water in 2021 than we did in 2020. But not a lot, less than 100 acre feet. Lopez use was down almost 1,200 acre feet, but state water was up 1,000 acre feet, and groundwater went up 300 acre feet approximately. And we pumped just a little less from the Pismo Formation than we did in 2020. So groundwater pumping, again, is 35% of our safe yield number, our current safe yield number. And then what our geologists have to do is, since the basin's adjudicated, we're not subject to SGMA, but adjudicated basins still have to turn in annual reports. And one of them is, how is the basin, has it gone up in storage? The change in storage, that's one of the calculations I have to do. And the estimated, we lost 1,400 acre feet in storage in 2021, which isn't horrible, but it's not the trend we want. So the question is, why aren't water levels higher? Of course, the drought and rainfall. And then what I was talking about earlier is this unequal distribution. So we get all this rain in January, and everything looks good. It's recovering, and then nothing. And then we get it back at the end of the year. But that has some impact into the water making it into the basin, unequal distribution of rainfall events, because of also that migration of groundwater from Santa Maria up through the Mesa up into our area, that recharge, that natural flow of water coming to us, there's a reduction from the east. It's not because we're over pumping, as you can see, based on our, that it's just an impact of the drought and other interruptions of flow into our basin. And what are the threats? Well, we've got this issue on the Mesa. They're pumping more than their safe yield. They've been doing that for some time. They're trying to rectify that, but what other threat? Of course, seawater intrusion. And then the other threats are, as the lake, Lopez Lake goes down, and we have reduced deliveries. Right now, we're at only 80% of our contract deliveries. We've cut back 20%. And the state water project's not doing good either. The only saving us is that the county had such a nice amount of water stored up at San Luis Reservoir up in Northern California to help fulfill our state water contractors in the county with full deliveries if they want, they choose to take it. But that eventually could be a threat as the drought continues. Here's a final slide. So here's our consultant out there, upper left, mile marker three. There he is. There they are actually sampling the wells. They actually pump water out of these wells, and they have prescribed procedures to take these samples. There they are, the Oceano Depot. And they just monitored, went out last month for third quarter, and they'll be back out again in October for the final quarter. That's my presentation. Do you have any questions? And thank you.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Barnage, any questions?
No.
Councilmember Stewart?
I do, just a couple, please. Shane, thank you so much. You are so good at this work that you do.
Thank you.
No, just really the way you explain it, it can be a very complicated subject, and so I really do appreciate just how you bring the information forward. I just had a couple of quick questions. When you talk about the Cienega area, how does that impact the entire area? Because it's not where our wells are and we don't necessarily monitor that, does that make a difference as to how that impacts the rest of the area that is being monitored?
You know, that's a really good question, Council Member. That's why our geologists and consultants put that on those contours and shaded that area in green, because we used to show these pumping depressions there. And it was like, oh my gosh, look how 15 feet below sea level. In reality, the portion of the basin they're pumping from, the alluvium, is not where we, meaning the cities and agent and the community service district, actually draw water. So it's more of a, does it impact us? A little bit. But overall, it's not where we mine our water from. That's where the farmers, but you got to remember this report, in fact, this PowerPoint, we present this information to our ag partners in the area. We just had a meeting here in the council chambers last month and presented this exact presentation to the representatives, Mr. Ikea, Zara Kubara, prominent farmers in the Rio Grande Basin. And they're our partners. I mean, because you can see ag pumps more than we do. So they have the greatest impact. But they're also pumping from the alluvium. So we want to give them some information, too, because it's important they understand what the basin situation is. And to be honest, they know just by production from the wells. They've been around so long. They know when things aren't great. In fact, they're even looking. I talked to Vard Ikeda at this meeting, and they've actually fallowed some land due to the situation. But to answer your question, doesn't have a lot of impact because it's not where we, it's not the true deep basin where we draw water from. It's more of the alluvium. And they, you know, and it's a smart thing for them because it's cheaper to pump. You don't have to pump it as far, and it takes less horsepower. There's a lot of reasons, that portion of the basin, even though it shows depression, is not really impacting where we come from.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And then when we talk about seawater intrusion, I know with Central Coast Blue, the hope is to fill our aquifers and keep them at a sustainable level to stop seawater intrusion. But if for some reason, once CCB is online and we do experience contamination, can we use that system to purify the existing aquifer water to remove the salt or and all
well,
the other stuff?
That's a good idea. Actually, those wells, that would be great, but the answer is no. Those wells are strictly going to be injection wells.
Okay.
But the intent is we take the treated effluent from the Pismo Beach wastewater plant, which is phase one, and run through the advanced water purification process and inject it into the ground, that those wells will then put that water into the basin and create that barrier we're talking about, even though that water wants to, seawater wants to come in as the basin gets lower, we will fight that back. Now, to answer your question, if those wells, for whatever reason, did start having seawater, the intent of Central Coast Blue was to push it back out.
Mm-hmm.
But not, the intent is not to draw water from those wells and purify it, no.
Okay.
That's
yeah, pure, I know that.
They're purely injection wells. But
okay,
we keep running Central Coast Blue and keep putting that 1,000 acre feet down there. You can see we only pumped 3,000 last year. We put 1,000 every year, and then phase two whenever that happens. But that's a third of what we're pumping. So the geology, the model, and everything tells us that once we get that going, we're going to have seawater intrusion. It will be handled.
Okay.
We'll take care of that.
And then one last question I had was a result of your presentation. When you talk about Mesa pumping and above the safe yield, certainly that's a different area than us. Do we review the other reports from the other agencies just to make sure they're complying? And if we do recognize there's overpumping or a problem, how does that get addressed and solved?
That's the big question, isn't it? Yes, the answer is yes, we do review their annual report as they do review ours. That's one of the things we do share information also with the Santa Maria Valley, and it's public information. Once it's filed with the court, anybody can read the report. those reports and those findings are submitted to the Superior Court. They are a record and that they're documented. And the process of what are we going to do about this lies with the Superior Court and whether we come to a physical solution to this situation. And the court is working towards that. And we've been working towards that with the court. And at some point in time, we will hopefully have some success in managing the basin overall in a more sustainable manner. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I think you were very delicate with the answer. Well, it's probably much more convoluted and complicated than trying to solve it here tonight.
It is.
Yeah, that's just a can of worms.
Yes.
But all I can tell you is they're aware of it. If you read the NMMA report, they know they've got a problem. They have a depression. They even admit that they see a seawater, the gradient reversing from the coast to the mesa to fill that depression. So that's in the report. And what the mesa parties are doing, of course, they built their supplemental water project to bring water from Santa Maria, which as they were required to do as part of the settlement and stipulation of bringing 2,500 acre feet a year. But last year they brought 1,064 acre feet from Santa Maria into the mesa. So they're still falling quite short of the requirement that was set forth by the court. But they're working towards it, and they have to start taking the full entitlement, I think, by 2026. That's the way the contracts with the city of Santa Maria are. So they are bringing in supplemental water, not to the level that we think they should have, but they've tried different. It's a money thing, but at least 1,000 acre feet is better than no. So they are working towards trying to bring more sustainability to the mesa, but right now there's issues.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're
That's
welcome.
All I had.
Thank you. I already asked you, right? That's right. So, Mayor Pro Tem George, any questions?
I have no questions, but thank you for the report.
You're welcome.
Shane, I do have a couple just, and I didn't think of them until you were talking because I kind of just get in that. But, yeah. It doesn't sink in the same way when I read the report as when I hear you. We've known for many years that they're overpumping on the mesa. That's not brain surgery, right? And so that didn't occur to me until the safe yield issue was in my head because I asked prior to the meeting whether we had spoken about that as part of Central Coast Blue. Then we kind of moved it off and said something was happening there. So first question is, where are we with taking a look at a newer version of what safe yield is?
Excellent question, Mayor. Yes. So the groundwater management agreement that was approved in 2000 or 2002, actually, I think, but Grover Beach, Oceano, us, there was some clauses in that agreement that we should review the agreement every 10 years, 2010 and 2020. So 2020 came along in our technical advisory committee meetings. I said, hey, it's time to do a review of this management agreement. And we were talking about safe yield, utilizing the groundwater model that was created through Central Coast Blue and updating our agreement. And we started down that path. We were making good progress, and then COVID. And it kind of got shelved. And then Central Coast Blue came along, and it was really happening. And then that ran into a few stumbling blocks. But we've made it through that. We are moving forward. And that has now reopened the door to begin looking at that agreement again. In fact, we have a meeting September 26th to discuss that very topic with our consultants and all our partners to look at the management agreement and start incorporating some of the technology and the groundwater model and making some adjustments in the language to the management agreement to bring it up to speed and modernize it to reality, the real situation that we're in. Those numbers that we use now were good numbers. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they came from the Department of Water Resources. Two reports, 1979 report on the Rio Grande Basin, they called it then, and the Santa Maria Basin in 2002, DWDR did an extensive report. It confirmed those numbers, even the Mesa yield numbers, but as growth has happened and the pumping has increased, it's obvious that the numbers that we used back from 1979 need to be modified, and that's what we're going to do.
So the second half of that question was this. It never occurred to me until just tonight, and I've been listening to this report forever and ever and ever. We've always known they're overpumping, but that overpumping is being measured on old safe yield numbers that we know aren't accurate for today's climate change world. So if and when we do come back with what's safe yield, that's going to blow up what's going on in MMA.
Yeah, you got to remember, our management agreement is just for the NCMA. Does not include the NMMA.
Maybe it's more of a comment, but my point is, in terms of the adjudication, is that something we get that we can now look at and say, okay, here's what our research shows, and have that be part of the adjudication?
That would be a legal issue. We got to file a motion with the court.
Got it.
What we're doing is we're going to, at least in my mind, as I'm getting sitting in these meetings, is to utilize the groundwater model. It's been fully calibrated. We've got grant money to help do it, plus we all shared in the expense of the model. And it does include the Mesa all the way to the Santa Maria River. And use the science. Let's use the science we have and come up with what can we safely, sustainably pump currently versus what we're pumping now so that we keep that ocean water from coming in. And we realize that, and we're going to utilize that in our agreement,
right,
just for the NCMA. The Mesa parties and Santa Maria, for that, they don't have any numbers in their. We're different. What we did, remember, in 1983, a group of water experts in the area created the gentleman's agreement. We were managing groundwater before anyone even thought that we should manage groundwater. So we had this management agreement that worked very well, and that came off and had actual entitlement numbers, and this is what we could safely pump, and we're going to take those numbers and then do some adaptive management and utilize the model. And what we're hoping is, by using the model and inputs on an annual basis, we can actually see, hey, how's the basin doing? How much water is in there? What can we safely pump this year? That type of technology, and build that kind of adaptive management instead of saying, this is our number. We know it's a fluid situation,
uh-huh,
and we want to be more adaptive and utilize the model and the inputs into it, meaning how much rain did we get this year? How much, and what were the temperatures and the put all this together and come up with, okay, this is what we can safely pump this year, you guys, without having issues. That's kind of where we're moving towards. But the Mesa and Santa Maria don't have that. We would like them to, but they don't right currently.
Leading the way. Thank you, Shane.
That's true.
Okay. Well, that's our questions. Let's go ahead and open it up to the public. See if anyone would like to come forward and ask a question. Make a comment. All right. Seeing no one, let's open it up to AGP.
If any members of the public would like to make a comment on this item, please raise your hand now. I see no raised hands.
And any written correspondence received, City Clerk Mattson?
There are none.
Okay. Well, this is a receive and file, so that concludes that agenda item. So this takes us forward to council communications. Anyone have communications? No, Councilmember Barnage?
I will miss you guys while I'm on vacation next meeting. That's my communication.
I deserved that taunt right there, didn't I? I walked right into that. Come on over here, gentlemen. And I just a reminder that only, that we are doing the village business meeting tomorrow, myself and Mayor Pro Tem, and really, really hoping for a productive and collaborative meeting. That is our goal, to have everyone here to sit down at the table and figure out how to work together. And if there's nothing that this council has ever stood for, it's that. So I hope that that's what carries forward tomorrow. I'm a little scared, so we'll see how that goes. So item 13, we have no closed session. Item 14, I'd like to just take a moment to adjourn in honor of Mel Cottrell. He passed away last week. He is a longtime member of our community and benefactor to the community. He died peacefully at home with family there, but we wish the entire Cottrell and Rugged Radio's family all our love from this council to you. So we will adjourn in his honor. Thank you, everyone. See you in a couple weeks.